Welcome to the Deep Dive. On behalf of the whole team here at the Great Awakening Report, we are so glad you're joining us.
Absolutely.
Today, we're jumping straight into the heart of things, unpacking the insights from this week's weekly briefing subscribers Q&A. The theme for the week of November 21st is, well, it's a big one.
It really is. We're calling this one Threshold Realities: Collapse, Convergence, and the New Architecture.
Exactly. And our mission, as always, is to look past the headlines to really try and understand the deeper architecture shaping everything around us.
You know, in an age of just constant information overload and, let's be honest, engineered narratives, just scanning the news is not enough.
Yeah.
It's really not. Yeah, we have to cultivate that ability to see the patterns, to question the core assumptions, and to develop a higher vantage point. It's about finding that clarity that cuts through all the noise.
It's clarity that critical thinking is, it's the essential tool, especially right now. And as we look at the external world, you know, geopolitics, economic shifts, institutional decay, we also have to look inward.
That's the whole point. True awakening, it's an inner recalibration. It's just as important as exposing what's happening out there. Managing your own emotional landscape is the bridge from confusion to clarity.
So moving from that mind consciousness, which is all fear and survival.
Right, the reactive seat.
And into heart consciousness.
Yep.
Coherence, intuition, that higher order awareness.
That's it.
And that's the lens we need as we analyze the 10 key stories we pulled this week. So let's get into it. Let's unpack these threshold realities, starting with geopolitics.
Let's do it.
Okay, so our first big discussion point, this one comes from question one. It's about the proposed Ukraine peace plan. The official line is all about diplomacy, but the real question is this U.S. drafted plan really about ending the conflict? Or is there a deeper geopolitical strategy at play?
Well, it's definitely a strategy. It signals a massive recalibration and driven by resource limits and, frankly, political fatigue in the West.
Fatigue is a good word for it.
This plan, you know, whatever its final terms look like, it's an exit strategy. It's just become politically, militarily, and financially unsustainable for the key players in the West to keep this going at the same level.
So what we're being sold as a diplomatic breakthrough is really, it's a policy pivot. It's driven by upcoming elections, by a lack of weapon inventories.
Yes, inventory shortfalls are huge.
And this bigger strategic need to pivot resources somewhere else, maybe the Pacific or stabilizing the Middle East. So it's like they're trying to change their commitment without actually admitting they lost.
And that strategic fatigue is precisely what Russia sees as validation. I mean, their entire long game strategy was to just endure the sanctions, wait for the political fractures and the exhaustion to set in among their adversaries.
And it seems to be working.
When they see Western leaders debating how much land concession is pragmatic, it just reinforces their belief that time is on their side.
This is where that narrative conditioning becomes so important for you to watch. You can see the mainstream headlines subtly shifting public expectations. The language is changing. Mm-hmm. It's moving away from total victory to framing things like territorial concessions as, what was the phrase? Necessary realism.
Necessary realism. That's
right,
it.
Yeah.
It's the clearest sign that a specific outcome is being manufactured.
Yeah.
Policies always follow the narrative. Always. Yeah. So you have to watch that shift in tone.
Absolutely. The war is being rebranded as diplomacy, not because anything is actually solved, but because the cost-benefit analysis has just fundamentally changed for the West.
Precisely.
Okay, let's pivot to a related issue. This came up in question four. The growing crisis south of the border, we're seeing rising cartel escalation, political protests in Mexico, and some pretty aggressive commentary from the U.S. about intervention.
Right.
Are we watching the incubation of a major border conflict here?
The signs are.
Yeah.
They're deeply concerning. Because what we're seeing isn't just criminal activity anymore. It points to a fundamental breakdown in state legitimacy.
What do you mean by that exactly?
I mean, the cartels are not just gangs. They're operating as parallel power structures. In some regions, they control territory, revenue, even populations, more effectively than the official government. That is the definition of a sovereignty crisis.
And then the response from the North is complicates everything. You have these statements from certain figures about being okay with potential military strikes inside Mexico.
Which Mexico, of course, immediately and loudly rejected.
Right. And that turns the border from just a security issue into a massive geopolitical pressure point.
It does. When a central authority gets that weak, a power vacuum is created, and it's always filled by these non-state actors. When that happens, at the same time you have rising foreign pressure, like the U.S., considering cross-border action, the whole region enters a state of profound destabilization.
So it's like a three-way conflict.
A tripolar conflict, exactly. You have the weakening state, the empowered cartels, and the threat of foreign intervention. We have to watch these structural shifts. They tell you way more about the future than any single headline.
Okay, let's transition from geopolitics to the economic architecture. Question two asks about the volatility we're seeing everywhere. You know, market crashes in tech and AI, the Japanese yen being so unstable. Are these just random events, or is this part of a coordinated global everything collapse?
They are definitely not random. I think it's crucial to understand that. They are synchronized symptoms of a much deeper structural decline cycle.
A cycle.
Yes. The current global economic model, which was built on 50 years of accelerating debt and cheap money, is simply reaching its mathematical limit.
Mm-hmm.
What we're seeing now is the mask of temporary turbulence falling off, and it's revealing a deep structural failure underneath.
That 50-year cycle you mentioned is so important. For anyone listening, we're basically talking about the time frame starting around the early 1970s, right? When the last ties to the gold standard were cut, and that basically removed the constraints on sovereign debt and unleashed the fiat money system we have today.
It's exactly right. Since then, growth has been fueled almost entirely by borrowing from future consumption.
Mm.
And now...
Oh.
Well, now the bill is coming due. The consequences are here.
And the institutions themselves are sending up flares.
Oh, absolutely. If you look closely, the signals confirm this. The Federal Reserve, for instance, has been issuing warnings about hidden risks in private credit and hedge fund leverage. These are areas with far less regulation than traditional banking.
Why is that private credit risk so significant? Why is that the thing to watch?
Because traditional banks have limits. They have regulations. But private credit firms, they operate in the shadows. They're creating these massive, opaque pools of debt that are highly concentrated and incredibly sensitive to economic shocks.
So if that market freezes...
If a large part of that private market freezes or collapses, the contagion, the spread, could be much faster and much harder to manage than even the 2008 banking crisis.
Wow.
And it's not just the U.S. Europe has publicly admitted that its economic model is, and I'm quoting here, geared for a disappearing world. They know their post-war structure just isn't compatible with today's high energy costs and global competition.
So it paints a picture where the official data, like employment numbers, is really misleading. They might look okay on the surface.
But they mask the explosion of gig work, disguise layoffs from automation, and a collapse in real purchasing power.
Oh.
This is how structural collapses begin. Slowly, with a lot of denial, but they accelerate.
Let's shift to institutional legitimacy with question three. This one's about the sudden political push to release the rest of the Epstein files. Why now? And what does this kind of controlled release tell us about elite power struggles?
It's a textbook case of strategic controlled exposure. A managed burn, you could call it.
A managed burn. I like that.
The fact that this is being driven politically and often with bipartisan alignment, that's the signal. It tells you that certain elite factions have decided the information is more valuable as leverage now than it is as a secret.
So this isn't some moral awakening driving the release. It's a tactical move. It's about gaining political advantage or maybe neutralizing opponents.
Precisely. When institutions are facing this kind of radical erosion of public trust, they often choose to sacrifice a few low to mid-level players. It redirects public anger. It makes them look transparent.
And it protects the deeper, more foundational networks.
It protects the real architecture. The goal is narrative containment. You give the public just enough to satisfy their outrage about the visible crimes, but you keep the operational structure, the intelligence, the corporate, the political dynasties that actually use that network, completely shielded.
So the insight for you, the listener, is to watch not just what is revealed, but who benefits from the timing of the release. The Epstein network wasn't a standalone thing. It was just one node in a huge web.
A massive web. And the fact that files are being released at all means that web is under immense pressure. Competing factions inside it are now using this information as a weapon against each other in a shifting power game.
Okay, for our final deep dive, let's connect the material world to the cosmic one. This is from question five. We have seen intensifying solar activity, right, and related spikes in geomagnetic activity. The question is, are these things truly connected to the rise in earthquakes, and even more, to measurable shifts in human consciousness?
The alternative research strongly suggests they are not just connected, but completely intertwined. Solar activity is, without a doubt, intensifying faster than the official models predicted.
And that means more CMEs, more coronal mass ejections.
Exactly. more powerful CMEs, more magnetic field anomalies. And when the sun's plasma hits Earth's magnetosphere, it creates measurable cascading effects across our entire planetary system. Weather patterns, shifting jet streams, seismic activity. When the cosmic environment changes, the Earth system responds.
And what about the human element? Because that connection between geomagnetic activity and our internal states, that often gets dismissed as being speculative.
And it shouldn't be. The correlation in the research is actually very robust. Our central nervous system is an electrical system. Our brain activity is highly sensitive to the Earth's Schumann resonance, which is directly influenced by these solar and geomagnetic spikes.
So it's like our bodies are antennas in a way.
That's a great way to put it. When this activity intensifies, many, many people report physiological effects. Sudden anxiety spikes, chronic sleep issues, moments of unusual clarity, or these big intuitive surges. This isn't random. It's the electrical system of the body responding to its planetary environment.
Which means consciousness and cosmic cycles are intrinsically linked. And this frames all these changes as part of a much larger transition, what we've been calling a threshold event.
Yes. As the old structures in society and the economy dissolve, this increased solar and geomagnetic energy is acting like a catalyst for awareness.
How does that work?
This energy helps facilitate a kind of species-level shift. It's where individuals start to access or remember a higher order of awareness, shifting away from those fear-based survival modes and grounding themselves in heart-centered coherence.
So the planetary instability and the expansion of consciousness are really two sides of the same evolutionary cycle. The chaos we see outside is actually the energy that's pushing the change inside.
Precisely. We are truly watching the cosmic and the human accelerate in perfect synchrony. The intensity is rising because this change is nonlinear. And the convergence of all these systems, geopolitical, financial, and cosmic, it all points toward a dramatic moment of transition.
Okay, let's try to synthesize all of this. We've talked about the forced geopolitical exit from Ukraine, the structural limits of the 50-year debt cycle,
the managed institutional collapse we see with things like the Epstein files,
and this energetic planetary shift driven by solar activity. When you put it all together, it converges on one unmistakable conclusion. The global operating system is reaching its structural limits.
And this external breakdown is the undeniable mirror of an internal awakening. The chaos, the friction, the uncertainty. These aren't signs of permanent decline. They are the catalysts that are forcing profound, necessary change. As the external narratives crack, internal truth emerges. This is the definition of a threshold event.
So the profound takeaway here is that the center of the old world isn't holding because a new center is forming.
A new center grounded in awareness, in radical discernment, emotional coherence, and a higher frequency perception.
And you, listening right now, you are not just a spectator in this. You are an active participant, an architect in the simultaneous collapse of the old and the birth of the new.
And to navigate this, we have to focus on the one field we truly control, our own sovereignty.
Let's review the core principles you can hold this week. Actionable steps, first. Release fear, reclaim sovereignty. Fear is the oldest tool of control. It's designed to keep you small and reactive. Choose courage instead.
Second, clear your field. This means actively practicing forgiveness, letting go of old density and attachments. Your liberation comes from clearing out that emotional static to restore your own inner clarity.
Third, return to the breath. It sounds simple, but use deep conscious breathing to re-anchor yourself in the present moment. It is the fastest way to shift yourself from unconscious reaction back into conscious observation.
And finally, lead with a volunteer heart. Choose compassion. Choose service and integrity, especially when the world outside feels chaotic. When you maintain a coherent, high-frequency field, you raise the entire field for everyone around you.
So we'll leave you with this week's question, something to really feel into and explore in the coming days. Are you consciously watching the movie, or are you unconsciously acting in it?
Just remember, ascending out of this matrix of fear and confusion is a daily devotion. It requires a constant, non-negotiable commitment to clarity, to discernment, and to your own alignment. Stay awake, stay sovereign, and stay connected.
Keep seeking, keep discerning, and keep rising. Until next time.